This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AvsFam. AvsFam.com for the coolest hockey shirts you're going to find anywhere. You're awesome. They're awesome. Get together and make more awesome. www.avsfam.com. So we have a special guest for you today, but this music just isn't going to cut it because Andy Drew, Andy D, is more like this.
Oh yeah, bring it home. Andy Drew. She puts the E in hockey. She puts the smooth in jazz. She's never frazzled, always dazzled. She brings the balance to the game. She is Andy Drew. Imagine that you walked up to a bar, sat down next to a nice, smooth lady, and you said, "Hey, don't you think the Avs are probably missing home by now? It's been a long road trip. I bet they wish they were back with their families right now. I know I'm that way. I bet Iggy's that way. What do you think?"
Yeah, Cody McLeod, I've heard, is that way too.
And then just like that, you found yourself in the middle of a conversation with somebody who knows what the hell they're talking about. That's right, Andy Drew. So we're going to bust right into this conversation, which turned into a podcast, and get right to it. Take it, Andy.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no denying that. I mean, he's an interesting guy. He's one of the guys on the team that you just want to go grab a beer with.
Yeah, I think that's what I was trying to say. Well put.
Who is it? Justin Bourne and his beer ability rankings? Cody McLeod would be pretty high on the beer ability.
I've never heard of that, but I like it.
Well, yeah, Google search. It's he used to write for The Score. I don't know if he still does, but yeah, he's got some great articles. Been a little down on the Avs recently, as most mainstream media people have, but all of his league-wide stuff is pretty solid.
Yeah, everybody's been a little critical, but they've had reason to be too. The Avs have been a little bit bipolar, maybe, and there's a great night, and then there's just, I don't know, nuttiness. Like, I don't know what happens sometimes. Washington, I saw that coming, but they were on a high with OV records, and I just kind of had an idea that was going to be a game to watch. But then we go into Winnipeg, and we look really good.
Yeah, I actually didn't get a chance to watch the Washington game, and then I came home and saw the score and was like, I think I can skip this one.
Yeah, it was rough. I watched it all, but it was just kind of like a painful thing. I don't know. I watch them anyways. I'm still a fan. Every time I get my heart broken, it takes me a couple days to get over it. And then I'm right back going, I think we got this. This is the catalyst. We're going to turn it around. Here comes our year.
And I'm like, okay. Yeah, we aren't making the playoffs. But all right, let's still find some positives. And, you know, I'm fine with being critical of the team and all of that. But, you know, there's still reasons to keep watching. And one loss is not sky falling. But yeah, I mean, this year has been rough. I wish the team was less allergic to October. Yeah. They kind of, in this division, we're already out of the playoffs. Out of the playoffs on October 31st. So,
and I take some heat for that too, but I think it's just being honest. I think that we're in a tough division to have such a horrible start, and as inconsistent as we've been, it's hard to even bet on a miracle at this point. So
yeah,
you have to find your storylines and the things that are interesting still. And you know, if you're a true fan, you just watch anyways, but, or maybe even if you're not a true fan, I don't know.
It's something to do, you know, grab a beer, go yell at some hockey players, because they give you plenty of reason. If you're one of those guys that likes to yell shoot, the Avs are the perfect team for you.
I am so not. That's why I actually don't even appreciate going to games sometimes, is it gets so bad with the chirping and the heckling and all that. And it's like, I don't know. I'm just curious that way. I don't like it at baseball either. I'm not a huge baseball fan. Although I sat once, like two rows up and two rows away from the dugout, and that's the worst heckling I've ever seen in my life. The more you pay for your seats, the more you feel like you can yell and scream and curse people out, I guess.
I mean, I'm usually up in the nosebleeds. But I've done some Avs games, but usually it's not against division rivals, or it's a predominantly Avalanche crowd. I've been to a St. Louis game, but we just stomped them. So nobody's going to be yelling too much on those nights. Eric Johnson had a beautiful goal that night. Oh, it's always fun watching him score against his old team.
It is. He's turned into a really good defenseman, too. you remember when we first got him? I wasn't so sure. I was like, they say he's going to be great, but and defensemen take longer and all these other caveats. And I don't know. I really like him now, obviously, but I wasn't always so sure about him.
Yeah, EJ won me over pretty early. He and Duchesne are probably my favorite players on the team, and I am a staunch defender of both of them. all of this trade Duchesne bullshit, it's like, The number of players I would trade Duchesne for in this league is probably in the 10 to 15 range.
That's quite a bit, even.
Well, I mean, I would trade Duchesne for Stamkos, Ovechkin, Crosby. And maybe not even those guys, because they're getting a little bit up there in age. Carlson, Subban. I mean, like, we're talking superstars here. Like,
would you trade for an injured McDavid?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to on that one, don't you? As it would make me, you have to. Okay, sorry, I interrupted.
No, I mean, it's... the number of people that you would trade him for. Yeah, there are guys. Nobody's untradeable. I mean, everybody uses Wayne Gretzky, and that was an awful trade. Awful.
It was horrible.
But, I mean, Edmonton did win a Stanley Cup without Gretzky. So, worked out well, kind of. And the Kings didn't want to win one with him, even though they did, you know, popularize hockey in the United States because of his presence.
Well, in California in particular, I think they solidified hockey in California in a way that we're still feeling today by having him. I mean, he was a star where stars are important. And even off the ice, you know?
I mean, he was the Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods. He's, you know, the guy in hockey. You don't earn the nickname the Great One just because you were some dude.
What is he doing now? Do you know?
I don't. I know he's still kind of pissed at the NHL because I don't think they paid him for his Coyotes coaching gig. There was something weird there about him coaching in Arizona and then not getting paid. And so I think there's still some bitter feelings, but I don't know what he's doing. I mean, the dude probably made enough playing. I think he has wineries. But I don't know if he's, like, actively on them or anything. But he makes wine. I think I saw an ad for that in the Toronto airport. You know, just random things. I'm not sure. It's not like Ray Borkin runs a restaurant. I'm still amused by the fact that Ray Bork has a restaurant.
It's kind of Elway of him, isn't it? I wonder if he's going to start selling cars now.
Yes. Selling cars.
I had a guy on the podcast who told me a story about Ray Bourque but he said that he was talking to McKinnon the day of the draft when McKinnon was drafted, and he asked him, you know, if you were going to get in a fight with somebody, who would it be? And there's a caveat to this story. I'm pretty sure it's all true, but I don't know that for sure. But anyways, he named off a bunch of old people I've never heard of, like Basil McRae or something like that. And then he got to the people he wouldn't fight with, and there was a couple. There was Scott Stevens, and then there was Ray Bourque. And evidently, Ray Bourque is known as a guy who maybe doesn't drop him a lot, but when he loses his shit and decides he's going to fight with you, he's the last guy in the world that you want to fight with, because he's as strong as two horses. He's amazingly, like, just stout. And I never thought of him that way before. I mean, I've watched his career quite a bit, even before he came here, and I never, ever thought of him as that kind of player at all. But it turns out that a lot of people have him high on the list of don't fight this guy.
Well, there are plenty of guys that, even as a hockey player, you should just know better than going after, because they are going to put you on your butt.
I mean, there's obvious ones, right? I mean, all the enforcers, you know who they are. Back in the day, you never wanted to touch Tony Twist because he was just nutty and crazy. You could punch harder than him and even hurt him, but he would just keep swinging until his head popped off. Like, those are the guys that would freak me out.
I mean, Ovechkin, I would not want to go anywhere near Ovi in a fight.
I was just looking at a picture of him today, and he was carrying out this huge bobblehead of himself. And that's not the funny part. That's just the interesting part. But the funny part is that as I was looking at him, I started thinking, like, this is what an athlete looks like who is not on TRT or, you know, not one of these like UFC guys who's doping or I don't know. It's just, it's so weird to see an athlete and then you see their body and they just, hockey players don't look as athletic to me as other sports. And there's some that do. I get it. Like Marty St. Louis has tree trunks for legs. Everybody's seen those and went, oh my God, how does he do that? But most of them are actually very not overly built in the upper body. Maybe their legs are huge, but that's about it. They're very human looking.
Hockey ass.
Oh yes, my friends, how can we not stop and pay homage to the first usage of hockey ass on ColoradoHockey.com podcast? That's right, Andy Drew has brought to you the knowledge. She has shared with you the term that is now and forever stuck in my head. It is hockey ass, and I do in fact have hockey ass. More on that later. Before we get out of control, let's get back to the smooth stylings of Andy D.
Hockey butt is an issue.
I'm learning so much from you today. Hockey butt, what was the other one? The beer meter or the...
Beer ability?
Yes, that.
Yep, yeah. No, hockey ass. Listen to Sidney Crosby talk about trying to find pants. And, or most hockey players, because, I mean, they're essentially squatting and then using their butt and their upper legs to push themselves around the ice. So it's a really huge workout for those muscles. So, you know, their rear is giant. Their rear and upper legs. It's just part of being a hockey player. Those are the muscles you need to skate well. So, yeah, hockey players don't look overly athletic until you get them from, you know, about their abs to their knees. And then it's a whole nother story.
Right, those, that core and the tree trunks. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had never thought about that before, and I never tried to picture as many as I just did when you were talking either. I'm pretty sure that Ray Bourque had hockey ass. Is that what we're calling it? Hockey butt?
Hockey ass. Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. How interesting. Now I'm going to be looking and feeling weird about it.
Well, you know, we talk about guys' groins all the time. So, you know, I've never seen... It's rare that you get a group of guys who are straight and really concerned about Varlamov's groin. Concerned about his groin.
I did a podcast once where I said, and there's something going on between Varlamov's legs. And I was like, oh no, I just said that. Like, I've really got to get a better filter for these things.
No, that's hashtag hockey porn. And that's just very normal.
You're a wealth of knowledge and all these terms. I feel like I'm behind the game now. I'm going to start reading everything you put out and then pretending it's my own.
I've just been on hockey Twitter a little bit too long. And, you know, I read this and that from various authors. And, yeah, you know, just try to keep up. I'm a latecomer to hockey. So I feel like I've got a lot of catching up to do. So, yeah, I read a lot and try to stay current. And, yeah. It's fun, and you pick up all sorts of crazy things, the little nuances of internet hockey fandom.
So how did you get into hockey then? Since we're doing this, and since we've turned this into a podcast, I hope you haven't said anything that you feel is too stupid to put out or that you wouldn't want to get out there, because this is turning into a good podcast.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much of this you want to publish. It's just two people talking hockey.
But that's pretty much what I'm all about, actually. These are called in-between episodes. And basically, it's just kind of having a good, authentic, and genuine hockey talk, which I think that we are for sure. Again, I wouldn't have thought we'd say certain things like hockey ass, but that's the beauty of it, so.
Well, you know, I am a straight female, and, you know, I like hockey, and I appreciate players for the skills they bring and all of that, but... You know, there are just some of those guys that you're like, okay, yep, that's, so anyway.
That's human, right? It's a really tough subject, actually, but I am unlike AJ in this case, where I don't exactly run from it, because I think you're allowed to have real human conversations. And even if you say something that you later want to take back, you should always have the caveat of going, okay, I was talking out of my ass, sorry about that. Like, I think there's a place for it, and people just get too social justice warrior about it sometimes, you know?
Yeah, sometimes. Yep.
But anyways, you were going to tell me how you got into this hockey thing to start with. So you're a writer for BSN, I think.
Yes. Right? It's kind of an interesting path. Up through high school, I really didn't know much about hockey. Looking back, I think I was always going to eventually end up a hockey fan. My family had a lot of hand-me-downs, and I got some from my cousin and picked out some sweaters myself. But I had quite a few Avalanche sweaters and sweatshirts growing up. I'm from Colorado and grew up in the golden era age. So even though I wasn't a big hockey fan, I knew who Sakic, Waugh, Forsberg, Foote, like everybody knew who those guys were. Everybody knew that if a kid came into class wearing a Red Wings shirt, you were allowed to make fun of them. No matter, you know, if you liked hockey or not, this is Colorado, they're wearing Red Wings, you make fun of them. So
it's your media at that point, really, but go on.
I mean, I watched some games in high school, went to an Air Force game, and that was a lot of fun. What really stuck is how beautiful and brutal the game was, and it's a really interesting mix. So that was kind of my first foray into the hockey scene. But when I went off to college, I would call my dad during Avs games because he was getting into hockey about the same time as I was. And we would watch games together, even though I was up in Montana and he was still in Colorado. And I just fell in love with the Avs. I think that there was one season, I think it was the 10-11 season, where they had that outstanding November and December. I mean, now I can say that was just the PDO-est PDO stretch ever. Totally luck fueled, but oh my gosh, it was so much fun to watch. And I think that kind of just cemented things with me. From there, I sought out Mile High Hockey. Just because I wanted somewhere to talk Avs with other people who wanted to talk Avs, and started asking questions and trying to read as much as I could on hockey and get caught up. Love Down Goes Brown, because if you understand the jokes behind DGB's anything he writes, you know you're doing okay as far as hockey knowledge. So, yeah, it just kind of all spiraled from there. They asked me to start writing for them, and then this opportunity with BSN came along and jumped on that. So, I don't know. It started out as a family thing, and now it's a huge part of my life. And actually, in high school, I struggled a lot with depression. And for me, you know, depression is different for everyone, but I had a really hard time feeling genuine emotions. I could still go through the motions of, you know, happy or sad or agitated, but most of the time things were just kind of gray. And hockey was one of the first things that made me genuinely happy, genuinely pissed off when the Avs do something extremely dumb, which, you know, we all know they do on occasion. So for me, it became kind of my antidepressant and really helped me get through and move on past that stage in my life. So hockey is basically my drug of choice. I think that's a huge part of why I love it.
So let's unpack that for a minute, if you don't mind, then, because I kind of have some same feelings on that. And I definitely find myself being a little bit more irritable and not awesome when the Avs lose. And I'd like to think I'm better than that, but it's true. After the Washington game, I wasn't much fun to be around. And anyways, this idea, though, that I've thought about this is why I'm bringing this up and kind of digging in on it. But I think that what I really love about hockey is that the highs are definitely really good highs, right? And you get to see people overcome things, and you can almost kind of live through them. Like Duchesne had a horrible start to the season, and then he turned it around, and he did all those things that makes a human look like a superhuman. And you know, he dealt with it when it was the lows, and then he came back and he he really fought for what he's achieving now, and all that's great. But at the end of the day, it comes in these bite-sized chunks where there's a game, and if it sucks for a couple of days until there's another game, and then you can start over and you can kind of relive the cycle. And usually in Colorado, there's more good cycles than bad. But I think that that's kind of what does it for me, is that even when it's bad, it's not bad for long. And, you know, with anything in life, you should be kind of Buddhist about it, I guess, where it's never as good or as bad as it seems. You got to kind of stay even a little bit. But for me, it's kind of like that. Is that, I'm sorry, what?
Got to stay even keel, you know, something put in like a 60-minute effort.
So I think it's really interesting you said that, though, because I kind of feel the same way about it.
Yeah, I mean, mine, I was a stupid year and didn't go get diagnosed. I think mine was actually probably a medical depression. But yeah, the genuine feels that come from hockey, good and bad, kind of struck a chord. In a way that nothing else really did. So, yeah, that's a huge thing. And then the community too. I've made a ton of friends. I'm a co-writer with a lot of the BSN people, and friends with them even outside of, you know, work related, I guess. I have made so many friends from Mile High Hockey, from Twitter, and it's within the Avs family and also in a broader hockey sense. I've got a lot of pretty close friends who I may have never met in person, but I feel like if I travel to Philadelphia or Boston or St. Louis or even Minnesota, I can be just give these people a call and say, hey, you want to go hang out for a little while, talk some puck and hang out. It's a nice community. Just finding your niche, finding somewhere you fit. And I really feel like I fit here. And that's a rare and wonderful thing.
Right. I mean, I think like sports too, to bring people together who wouldn't otherwise hang out together or feel pain together or cheer really loud together or pump their fists and go, hey, when the goal is scored. So I get you on that. I think that's really awesome about sports, and especially everybody has a team they can sort of represent. Like, you know, there's some people who have the college they went to and they'll forever and ever be tied to that college and the team that plays. But for some people, I mean, it's not like that. And so for me, I grew up playing hockey. I could skate before I could walk. Still better at that, actually. But I think it's the undervalued piece of sports that it brings people together in a way that few other things do. And like when the Paris thing happened recently, all the people who came together, the way that everybody kind of had one cause that they cared about briefly, anyways, I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's interesting because sports, I mean, they're a good distraction away from the troubles of life. That's a huge part of them. And they're also, in some ways, a little bit easier, a little bit cleaner. There's the good guys and the bad guys, and you cheer for your guys, and then the bad guys, they go away. And sometimes you have hard feelings, but it's not like they are hard feelings that actually matter. I mean, like, right now, the Avs don't like the Wild. And yes, it's fun to not like the Wild. They're the bad guys. It doesn't mean that they're bad people. It doesn't mean any of that. It's just, it's kind of fun to have something so clear cut and crisp that doesn't actually affect your life, but it's just kind of a fun game, fun community experience to be a part of. I'm not sure if I'm vocalizing exactly what I'm thinking right now.
I think you're doing it well. Yeah.
You know, it's real life is just so messy. And there's always two sides to the story. And it's very rarely black and white. It's all shades of gray. Whereas sports are, at least for a little while, you know, just black and white. Good guy, bad guy. And then the game ends and you all go your separate ways and life goes back to being gray. But for that little bit, you know, it was simple and easy and emotional. And, you know, for people who do tap into that, it's a great thing.
So let me ask you this then. Do you watch, and this will make sense in a minute, but do you watch like Game of Thrones or I can't think of any others, but kind of dramas on TV?
Here and there, yeah. Game of Thrones is definitely one that's got me hooked.
So I kind of like that. I like it, but I would never watch it by myself, right? And the thing is I have enough drama in my real life, so I don't need this manufactured drama. And again, this is why I think that hockey is so good for me, is it's like, all right, from here until 3 hours from now, I'm all in on this. But at the end of the day, the drama is solved, right? Like, I'm hearing Jon Snow's coming back now. I'm like, how can that be? He was dead. There's nothing final on TV?
I mean, for me, I love stories. Like I said earlier, I'm a dreamer. I love stories. So I love, you know, these TV shows with the ongoing story arcs. But the thing I like about hockey is that it's a little bit more real, a little bit more tangible. It's like reality television, but less dumb, less scripted, less, you know, it's actual reality. And people who are, you know, this is their job, this is what they do, they're trying to make a living at this, and it's playing this sport, and a very high drama sport, one that you know, the stuff when people don't like each other, it's not just because some producer is back screen telling them not to like each other, it's because they genuinely have a beef somewhere along the line. And I just think it's interesting to see those raw emotions in a organic form.
And it's so much more primal too. I mean, when it's on the ice and it comes to a head, it's much more in a fight or flight kind of way. And I don't know, I think I respond better to that than I do to, like you were saying, the manufactured reality TV where people are kind of being told how to feel, or people are knowing they're supposed to put on a show, or they're just trying to save face and, you know, being backstabby. Like, I just don't get it. I know, yet another rabbit hole we went down, but I think it makes sense, right? I mean, I'm always digging in on why people like hockey and what is it they get out of it and why do they watch. And we've never been in a spot before within, you know, the last 10 years or so where you can watch a game and get instant feedback from everybody else on social media like you would being at the game. I mean, you don't have to get beer spilled on you by the guy behind you and stuff, but you can get real feedback. And a lot of it's harsh and a lot of it's maybe out of place, but it's a fun way to participate in the game that was never available before.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, with Twitter too, yeah, sometimes you get the people that show up and you don't necessarily agree with them. But the rest of the time, it's kind of like being in a room with your buds watching the game. Even though, you know, one is in North Carolina, one's in Colorado, one's in New Zealand, it's kind of a global community of just sitting down and watching the same game and bouncing ideas off of each other. And like any other friend group, I mean, you pick who you associate with, and you pick who you listen to and like to interact with. And I have a group of people on Twitter that are, you know, they're my Avs family, and we all sit down and watch the game and then BS afterwards, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, it's just another one of my multiple friend group that I'm very, very thankful for.
I think it's awesome. I think it's really kind of changed the way that people watch the game just in general. And I'm with you on that. The one thing I wish I could do, I wish in real life I could maybe mute people or just unfollow them for a while and things like that. It's a little bit harder to do in real life, but the mute button would be huge on a couple people.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I'm not going to keep you for too much longer, but since this kind of turned into a little podcast, I do have a couple of questions for you.
Sure.
What do you think of the work or the, how should I say this? So the player safety, what is it? Comedy troupe, commission, whatever they are. And the suspensions they've been handing down lately. I know that it's a sore spot for the Avalanche fans, but do you feel like they've been consistent? Do you feel like they're actually doing a service to the game with the way that they've been sort of policing the on-ice actions?
Well, the thing with calling all of the penalties and, you know, even looking at suspending is, it's still very subjective. It's also based on the camera angles that they have available, and none of those camera angles are down on ice level. So, I mean, there are going to be things they miss, and they miss a lot. Would I say they're consistent? No, not really. It's kind of all over the board. But I think that in general, They're throwing the book at things that need to be taken out of the game. The headshots, blindside hits, things resulting in injury. It's really frustrating when your player is on the receiving end of a suspension, but we've also been on the flip side where, you know, we lost our captain for half a season. You know, Winchester is still dealing with concussion symptoms and may never play again. We lost Deadmarsh to concussion stuff too, even though he was traded. You know, it's a problem. You look at Sidney Crosby too. He's not obviously abs, but he's a big face of the NHL, and to have him dealing with concussion issues, it's not good for the brand. It's not good for the players. And I think the Department of Player Safety throws the book at people for the right reason. Again, it's frustrating when your guy is the one getting the beat down when you can pull up, you know, 20 other hits that didn't get that same response. But I think that even with the intermittent suspensions and penalties, it's telling people that you might not always get caught, but there's always that possibility you will. So watch what you're doing out there. Hockey is a very, very passionate game. When you get going, you're not necessarily thinking about things. So sometimes it takes a pretty drastic measure to get the point across that we need to get these hits out of the game. And yeah, I think the Player Safety Commission is doing a decent job there.
So I can see why they keep you around this group of writers you hang out in, because you're very balanced. You're a really good thinker, but you articulate yourself so well that now I'm over here going, oh, I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have called them a comedy troupe. Maybe she's right.
No, they kind of are in some ways a comedy troupe in that trying to figure out which ones they look at and which the ones they don't. It's awful. It's hilarious and awful in a terrible way, but yeah, I think their mind and their purpose and their mission is in the right place. Do I wish they got better execution? Yes, but it's one of those things where you're never going to make everybody happy. I feel like they're doing the best they can. It's really unfortunate that the Avs have had the Barry and Landeskog suspension so far this year. Were they warranted? Were they not? I don't think either of those players are dirty players, but they made a mistake out there. And that's where the concussions come from, are mistakes. It's not from, well, by and large, not from the Matt Cooks and Rafi Torres and, you know, Sean Avery's of the league who just destroy people and continually destroy people. It's from, you know, honest players who just have a bad hit or make a bad choice. So
people look at the Landy hit and then they look at the Jonathan Toews hit and they think, you know, pretty much same situation, but why did Landy get the suspension where Toews, I don't even think he got a penalty, but he definitely didn't get suspended. And I mean, that's where I kind of look at it too. I'm like, yeah, that seems like a good point. I mean,
is yeah, no,
special it, privilege because of who he is?
Yeah, I mean, it is a good point. And like I said, you can pull up a list of 20 hits that didn't get a suspension, didn't even get a penalty, that were as bad or worse. And it is really frustrating as a fan to see that. But again, I think that at least by catching some of them, as frustrating as it is that they don't catch more, you know, they're at least putting that fear, putting that thought, the, oh, hey, I better pull up here because I don't know if the Department of Player Safety is going to be watching tonight. You know, are they going to see this? Are they going to suspend me? I should, you know, maybe pull back and look for a better hit. That sort of thing.
Have you played hockey before?
Very little bit. I'm still in the process of skating and my puck handling is atrocious. But
So I ask because, like, you probably know just with that, then the being on the ice, there's an awful lot to think about. And when you're going at the speeds that these guys are, I mean, that's a whole lot of things to think about before you hit a guy. And in a lot of cases, and I brought this up before too, but it seems like guys are almost trying to get the penalty calls by turning into the boards when a guy goes to check them and things like that. I mean, not always, but I've seen a handful of them where they get bumped from 6 feet out and suddenly dive head first into the boards where maybe they didn't get hit that hard. So I don't know. I think that there's a lot going on out there. And again, it's that kind of that fight or flight. Like, you know, some guys react differently to different things, but I don't know. I think you're probably right. I don't think there's a lot of guys out there looking to headhunt. I think that's a very select crew of people who, you know, that's what they get paid for and that's their job. And the league really is to agitate and sort of be that guy. But I don't know. I think you're probably right about all this.
I mean, it's, I don't think they're purposely trying to hit them. I don't think they're even really thinking about it. It's, you know, it's a muscle memory thing too. You learn how to play the game when you're little, or like me, when you're an adult. But when you're out there, if you're thinking, you're not going to be able to respond quickly enough to the play, to the developments of everybody else moving on the ice. I mean, there's so much to keep track of. And yeah, you know, when you're lining up for a hit, you're thinking about, you know, getting the puck and getting it going the other way where your other, you know, teammates are on the ice, what's happening with the rest of the play. You know, there's a million things going through your head. And, oh gosh, the Department of Player Safety honestly probably isn't at the top of the list unless, you know, you've made one of those hits, you've been suspended, you see that player coming up and you go, oh, wait, I had to deal with this before. In some ways, it's Pavlovian. You've got to train yourself like the bulldog to not make those hits in the moment, in the heat of everything, without even thinking. And I think that's kind of what the Department of Player Safety is trying to do. Whether or not they're successful is a completely another story, but I think they are trying to get it ingrained into the subconscious of players that, you know, don't make those hits. That's not okay.
So interesting that you bring this stuff up, because some of it I'm actually like, there's points I was going to bring up and I'm like, no, that would have no place in a podcast like this. And then you bring it up. So the muscle memory thing, what do you imagine happens after a meeting with the player safety and you get suspended? Is it just, hey, that really sucks, you know, you're not going to be here for a couple of days? Or do you think that the team goes, okay, well, let's talk about the hit and let's try to understand what the problem was. And then, you know, sort of try to rewrite that muscle memory so that players have a better reaction when they can't have that full thought or that time to really think it through. Do you think any of that happens? Or do you think it's just like, sucks, you're suspended, we'll see you in a couple of games?
Well, I would imagine that the Department of Player Safety actually walks them through why they're suspended. If nothing else, they're putting out those videos now. Even for fans to watch. So I feel like if you get suspended, you're probably pissed off, but at some point you're going to want to know why. And I would imagine that the phone hearings involve some, like, this is what you did, this is why we didn't like it. Instead of a, no, you go sit in the corner for two games.
You're in timeout.
No, we're doing
it. I guess so, I was looking at it more like if you are watching video with your team and they scored a goal on you and you weren't where you were supposed to be. I'm thinking Big Z on this one, right? He's a good player, but he's not always in the right place away from the puck. And so that's something that they would look at film. They would talk to him, go, you should be here. You shouldn't do this. You should do that. And I need you to have, you know, eyes on this guy over here. But when it comes to a hit like that, I don't think that there's any of that. I think it's just like, hey, that really sucks that you got suspended, so don't do that again. And maybe the player reflects on it, just an interesting little thought I had as you're talking about muscle memory and sort of the instincts of players.
And I think it would also probably depend on the person. There are some people who, you know, it takes multiple times for them to get that out of their game or start rethinking it. Because again, it's the heat of the moment. And they've been trained since they were little boys and girls to play that way. I'm thinking kind of Marchand right now. Or even Landeskog, who is a very physical player. And sometimes he goes for hits that he probably shouldn't. Kind of like the one where he got suspended. Was it a good hit? Was it a bad hit? it doesn't matter. It looked bad enough. It wasn't a hit he probably should have been making anyway.
He probably knew that too, right? Because he was right up apologizing. Maybe that wasn't the right thing to do because he got punched in the face for it. But it seems like maybe he knew that things didn't go well on that one. Like, oh, really sorry, man. I didn't mean to do that. And then boom. But
yeah, and I mean, he's been making a lot of boneheaded penalties to start the year too. I love our captain. I mean, I love Landeskog. I adore him as a player. But, you know, he makes stupid choices sometimes. And I think that in some ways, having the book thrown at him, and hopefully it makes him a little bit more cautious when he's out there, thinking, okay, you know, even if it drops his game down a slight peg, if he's not making those bad hits, if he's keeping his stick where it should be, and, you know, not reaching out and getting players' hands or hooking them or, you know, doing all the little other ticky-tacky stuff that the refs are going to call, it's going to benefit the team. So I think it's just a match point of, you know, getting it across that you need to be more conscious of what you're doing out there. And yeah, adding it to the list of a million things that are going on in your head, but making it more of a priority to, you know, keep yourself in check, I think is really the aim of the Department of Player Safety. And for some players, it would probably take a couple times, but others, hopefully it reflects in their game pretty quickly.
So this kind of ties into one of the other things I was going to talk to you about. From the top to the bottom, from GM to coach to captain, which is where that ties in, by the way, do you think we have the right people in the right places?
Well, I'm not upset with the people we do have in there. I'm very happy with Sakic. I think he's doing a very good job. More than anything, I don't have a problem with them, but I want to make sure that they're surrounding themselves with the right people. And I think that the front office is a really good mix so far. I'm not in the room. I'm not at every practice, but I'm slightly more unconvinced with the assistant coaches. I think Wah definitely wants to win. Wah approaches things as a goaltender might. And I think that there is value there. I think Wah wants to be an innovator. He wants to push hockey in ways it hasn't been pushed before. And I really appreciate that of him. But there is also something to be said for having somebody with a lot of experience and with a lot of success behind the bench. And looking at his two current coaches and even some of the video side, a jury's still out on this group, shall we say. So, I mean, that's I kind of feel like where the weak link might be, is that Wah does have his faults, as everyone does. He has a lot of strengths, but if the faults are overshining those strengths, it's not going to end well, and you're going to end up with a lot of people calling for his head, like happened earlier in the season. Landeskog, I'm fine with him as a captain. Again, it seems like the guys in the locker room respect him, and that's probably the biggest thing you want from a captain. And he's surrounded with guys like Aginla, and even though it peeves a lot of Avalanche fans, I think Cody McLeod is also a very big influence in that too.
And there it is, my friends, a conversation that became a podcast that we call an in-between-isode, this with Andy Drew, who was absolutely awesome, and you can find links to her in the show notes. Andy is a wealth of knowledge, a voice of reason, and an absolutely cool person to talk to. We can't thank her enough for being on the show, and we hope to have her back again. As always, this show is brought to you by AbsFam, absfam.com, but we're adding somebody else to the list now too, because we love them. We've been checking them out for about a year now, and believe it or not, it has something to do with hockey ass. If you're like me and you grew up playing hockey and you have legs like tree trunks and you can still skate better than you can walk, you need to check out MeUndies. MeUndies is underwear. It's really cool, awesome underwear made out of birchwood, stretches in four directions, it doesn't smell, moisture wicking, all the things that you would expect, right? But we really put these things through the ringer because they cost like 20 bucks, which, you know, maybe for some people isn't a lot, but it's underwear and I kind of run through these things. But it turns out these ones are awesome because I haven't destroyed them yet, even after a year. They're my go-to underwear, not just for hockey, but also for everyday life. We think you should check them out. We'll put a link to them in the show notes. And if you decide to do it, you get 20% off and we absolutely get a cut of it. Let's be really clear about that. We're not trying to trick you on this one. We are finding ways to support this podcast, to pay for equipment, to pay for the services that we use to record people, all that crap that you don't care about. But we wouldn't put it up there if we didn't believe in it. And we want you to check it out and see if you believe in it too. If you do, you get a discount and we get a cut of it and life is good for everyone. So with that, stay awesome.